next minute.
Good morning, Pedro.
Good morning, Honorable Domo.
Good morning, Honorable Imam Sheikh.
Good morning, Chair. I've got a very difficult day. Got health, got police, got chief whoops, and also got a day to the Minister of Finance. So I'll be participating, but no questions or things, because it's going to be very difficult.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Honorable members, welcome. Can we start our meeting? It's a portfolio committee meeting with two issues to consider. We have moved the minutes, the outstanding minutes, further down to allow Ms. Machalamba, who has a commitment at the school of her child, to come in late and go through with those minutes. But so long, we'll start with the item of the Northwest Province Department of Health making a presentation to us, a presentation that we already have, of which I would want them to run through it quite fast, so it allows us time for questions. I noticed certain slides were really having quite a lot on issues of quarantine sites. So maybe those are the issues that we may just go through them quickly. Eight members have logged in right now. The MEC for Northwest, Honorable Sambata, is already logged in. I see also Ms. Janet Hunter, and therefore one of the things I would need to know from the MEC, either in his opening remarks or later in the questions, how long are they going to remain under Section 100? Because I know Ms. Janet Hunter to be a DDG in the National Department of Health. May I then, after welcoming you, honorable members, and giving you an indication what is our responsibility, wish that we continue with the minute, with the meeting, and still accommodate the minutes at least before 10 past one. At least we need to have a bit of a break, because at 2 o'clock, I suppose, yes, the budget speech starts at 2. So we need to give you some time, a comfort break of not less than 30 minutes, please. At least 45 minutes would be better. May I then request Lindokuhle to read and give an indication of who are logged in and who are the apologies that we might have. Welcome to the staff members from Parliament, welcome to our members, and welcome to the leadership from Northwest Department of Health. Ms. Lindokuhle.
Morning, Honorable Chair, morning members. Chair, can I ask Nombali Makubane to do the register? Thank you.
Okay.
Morning, Chair, morning to the members. In the meeting, we have Dr. Lomo, Mr. Munyai, Ms. Gela, Mr. Sokacha, Ms. Tseke, Ms. Gwarube, Mrs. Wilson, Ms. Ishmael, Ms. Chiro, Dr. Tembekwayo, Mr. Van Staden, and Mr. Sheikh. So far, I don't have any apologies.
Mashengwa is present.
Oh, sorry, ma'am.
Mashengwa is present.
Mama Shengwa, we note you. I can see you. You are present, Mama. Thank you very much. There's one apology that came directly to me, and I asked Dr. Howard to send her apology also to the team, to the secretariat, so she might have missed doing that. Dr. Howard is traveling from Gauteng to Cape Town, and she will not be able to log in now. Thank you very much. May I then hand over to MEC Sambata, who will introduce his delegation, and maybe then make his opening remarks and allow his team to make a presentation. But may we then agree, members, we adopt this agenda as is, the presentation from Northwest, followed by clarity-seeking questions, then we do the minutes later. Can we do it in that order? Anyone who would like to support the agenda as is?
Chair, it's Honorable Anna Kela. I'm supporting the agenda as it is.
Thank you very much, Anna Kela. Honorable Kela, any seconder? Honorable Sheikh.
Honorable Sokacha, seconds.
Thank you very much. Thank you much. Let us then move straight to MEC Sambata and his delegation. Honorable MEC.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chair, as a team, let's welcome the invitation by the National Portfolio Community of Health, and that at all times when we are needed as a department and the team will avail ourselves, because what oversight does to us, it helps us understand areas that we are not doing well on that may be detected by others who are doing oversight, but also help us to improve delivery of services at all times. The Department of Health Northwest, it's under Section 101B administration, which means we do have an administrator. We do have an administrator with us from the National Department of Health, and the administrator's name is Jeanette Hunter. My name is Madoda Sambata, MEC. The administrator is Jeanette Hunter. I will request, therefore, Chair, to allow the administrator to introduce the administration team, and then the administrator can lead with the presentation on behalf of the department. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members.
Okay. Ms. Hunter, you are to take the floor. Please tell us how long are you going to stay in the Northwest? We need you in Pretoria, where you are supposed to be working. Start.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Good morning to the MEC as well and my colleagues who's on here. MEC has introduced me. We've also got our Acting Chief Director for Systems, Mr. Yanni de Beer. We've got the Chief Director for Hospitals and Clinical Support Services, Mr. Obakeng Mongale. And we've also got our Acting Chief Director for Infrastructure, Mr. Kitso Molawa on the call, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, I had wished to have been out August 2020. In fact, we developed a roadmap for exiting, which MEC and I signed to the Minister of Health for August 2020. But at that stage, the IMT led by Minister Nkosasana Dlamini Zuma had felt, the whole IMT had felt we are not ready, and a new date was given to us for March 2021, and we met a week ago with the IMTT and the ad hoc committee of the NCOP responsible for the administration in the Northwest Department of Health, where a cabinet decision was endorsed that said, no, we are not ready to exit as an administration. The exit will be reviewed in June 2021. The key reasons given, Honorable Chair, is the fact that Department of Health has not yet appointed an HOD, and so has many other departments in the province that's under administration, including the Office of the Premier. And this is not through lack of the department working hard to appoint an HOD. In fact, we did make a recommendation to the Premier last year in February, after following the procurement processes, but that process did not go through for reasons that's very long, and I can't keep the committee on that. So we are in the process of making another submission to the Premier. In fact, no, we've done so already 2 weeks ago. We've made another submission to the Premier, which will also go to the Minister of the Department of Public Service and Administration, where we recommended a candidate for appointment, Chair. So it depends on there's a few things we still need to do to get sustainable stability with regard to pharmaceutical services in the province. We need to appoint an HOD. Those are the two things, and then health will be ready to exit. But of course, it depends on the IMTT cabinet and the NCOP chairperson.
Okay, thanks for that detailed response. Then go ahead, ma'am, with your work that you came to present to us today. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'll try to share my screen. Yes, it looks like I can.
Sorry, Chairperson. Chair.
Yes, Ms. Bakhube.
Chair, I would like to make a proposal to you, and perhaps before we get into the nuts and bolts of the presentation that the Northwest has, I do think that the issue around the administration and the appointment of the HOD and the like is something quite material before we actually move on. And so I wanted to ask for your indulgence if we can perhaps ask some follow-up questions in particular relating to that, because I think it's material to the administration that the Northwest has been placed under, without getting into the nuts and bolts of the department's work as of yet. I don't know what you think about that.
Do you have a challenge to put that in part of your questioning?
I mean, I can, Chair, I don't have a problem. I just thought that, I mean, I think it's just a separate matter, because obviously the province still being under administration, the lack of an appointment of an HOD is something which is separate from their performance. But I mean, I have no problem if you would like us to proceed in that way. I was simply making a recommendation.
May I request, ma'am, that we put it part of the discussion? That's why I would have wanted to make a follow-up after just... I was just introducing her and said, why are you still there? Yes, we may do a follow-up in our questions. Let's probably put it as part of that package when you ask questions. Thanks.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. Then continue, Ms. Hunter.
Thank you, Chair. I have heard you, Honorable Chair, that we must not dwell at length on some of our slides. So the thank you. As MEC has said, we really appreciate the invitation. We would like to provide the committee with the information in terms of what we are doing, and we'd like to get further advice and direction to improve what we are already doing. I won't go through that. Chair, this is our strategy, the Northwest Department of Health strategy for managing COVID-19. It has four key pillars. Of one, prevention, two, treatment, three, surge preparedness, and we have now already faced two surges, and then, of course, the important management of human remains. Chairperson, we have to strive to implement these pillars amidst other burden of disease contributors, which means our normal health work has to continue while we are also trying to manage COVID-19, and this is what those little stars all around those four pillars indicate, that we still need to keep our eye on managing other burden of disease contributors. Chair, the success of our strategy is mostly dependent on our staff wellness, so we have to look after our staff physically and mentally. We need a good referral system between all our different levels of treatment, but also between us and other provinces, between us and the private sector. We need our administrative processes of human resource management, finance management, supply chain management, and also the discipline within the department. In other words, consequence management has to continue. A key thing with regard to discipline and consequence management is that we soon learned, unfortunately, that a lot of staff wanted to take advantage of the lockdown levels and the prescripts that some staff must work from home. And in a health department, there are staff that simply cannot work from home. and we had to apply strict discipline there to get staff to come back on board, because we are priority services, and priority services needs to be emergency medical services, service officers have to be there. Even clerks in wards have to be there to support the medical people in the wards. And that's why as Northwest Department of Health, it starts with me, the senior managers, we have to go to the office, we have to be there so that we can lead from the front. Of course, it proved that we need infrastructure improvements. We need good governance and community participation, and I must say we received this governance through the National Command Council, the Provincial Command Council, and we also have well-functioning district command councils in the province, which helps us with implementing our strategy. The strategy, if we look at those columns on the right, chairperson, is also very strongly dependent on epidemiological information and also the management of that information. We're doing constant training to all our cadres of staff with regard to COVID-19. We need a good communication system. We need the collaboration with all the other sectors that I have mentioned before. And it's only with this that we would get the desired outcomes, Chair. Now, just to then briefly dwell on those four pillars, under prevention, we must have the personal protective equipment. We must do continuous health education, screening, management of contacts, and quarantine for people who cannot quarantine at home. And also the isolation of positive people who cannot isolate at home is very important. And recently we added to our toolbox of prevention, our vaccination program, Chair, and we end this presentation with also sharing with the committee how we are doing on the vaccination program. Then, of course, there's the treatment, and then there is the different strategies for being prepared for the surges. And as I said, Chair, can you hear me?
When you take a pause, we don't hear you. But I can hear you now. That you are asking.
Yeah, because my screen is saying that I'm muted, so it looks like the system is muting me because I'm not muting myself. Chairperson, the slide is slightly different from the one you have in your presentation, because I thought it prudent to update it with the data that we got at the end of day yesterday. You would have the data for end of day 22 February. So yesterday the country clocked 998 new cases, which took our total to 1,505,586. And this graph also shows how it is distributed across the 9 provinces. Chair, this is the slide for the Northwest. I did not yet get an update on this one. But the day before yesterday, we were happy to see that we only had 38 new cases. In the Northwest, and this one also shows the distribution of our cases, showing that Bojanala is the district with the highest incidence, followed by Dr. Kenneth Kaunda, and then Nakamodiri Molema, and our district with the lowest incidence is Dr. Ruth Segomotsi Mompati. But altogether, as of yesterday, Northwest had a total of 60,335 COVID-19 cases. Chairperson, this slide just shows where we are in comparison with other provinces. We are the darker pale blue line, and it shows that Eastern Cape now has the lowest daily numbers. If we look at how this graphic ends to the far right, Eastern Cape is that light blue line. And it is then followed by Limpopo and then us with the lowest daily numbers. The Northern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, Mpumalanga, Free State and Western Cape are competing closely as the provinces that still have the highest daily numbers. Chair, this is the same type of graphic, but just showing now the different districts in our province that shows Kenneth Kaunda now of late, the purple line, has the highest daily numbers. then followed by Bojanala, and then Naka, and Dr. Ruth Tegemotsi Mompati seems to be competing now for low daily numbers. Chair, I'm not going to read this in full because these are the things that I've already been saying, but to say that the provinces as well as our, the four districts in our province is now showing a downward trajectory in terms of new cases, daily new cases. And then the Northwest's current recovery rate is 92%. It is below the South African recovery rate, which is 94%. The reason for the lower recovery rate is that Northwest surged later than other provinces like Eastern Cape, Western Cape, Gauteng, and KwaZulu-Natal. Chairperson, this graph just gives a comparison between the first surge and the second surge. First surge was May, June, July. Second surge started late December, went on to January, and started easing out at the beginning of February. We see that the first surge was longer in duration, but it didn't have the high numbers that the second surge has got. So the second surge, fortunately for us, was over within 4 weeks, because we were really registering very high numbers and our hospitals were starting to feel pressure during the second surge. Chair, even though we're showing a decline as a country and as the Northwest with numbers, we now know that COVID is not gone. It is just waiting for us to start behaving recklessly, and we must recognize that our next public holiday coming up is Easter, the Easter long weekend, and the country and the province's leadership has to make plans that we try and avoid a third surge. It means that we must continue to work to in unison to flatten the curve. It means that apart from going to work and undertaking activities to generate legal income, citizens must stay at home and adhere to the red toolbox. That is we have termed all the measures that you need to take to prevent COVID-19, the red toolbox. So health education by all departments and MECs and the Premier must continue in our province. And we need SAPS to support us with enforcement of regulations there where they are blatantly flaunted. Chair, the dotted line on this graph is our testing rate. And if we look at the sixth epidemiological week, which is last week on this pictorial, we see that we are still keeping our testing rate quite high, but that our positivity rate has come down quite a bit. If we look at the sixth epidemiological week, we will see that we have a 12.4% positivity. So the positivity has come down right from 36% in the last week of December. That is our 53rd week. Positivity rate was 36%, and it has now come down to 12.4%. Chair, as you rightly said, we have these in here just to show that putting people under quarantine is still an important part of our prevention strategy, but I certainly do not have to go through all these numbers with the committee. This one is important, Chair, because so far I've just spoken about raw numbers, and as we all know, raw numbers say nothing. This is the significant slide because provinces have different population sizes. And then in terms of your population size, you will show a certain positivity in terms of your numbers. But if we look at what percentage of the population is positive, we see that Limpopo has the lowest population positive. Mpumalanga and Northwest shares second place, and then followed by Northern Cape and Gauteng. The province that still has the highest positivity rate per population is the Western Cape with 3.9%. That is what I've already said now. In terms of mortality, we have a slightly higher number, fractional, higher number of males succumbing to COVID-19 than females. But the red line, the blue line is the cumulative numbers in terms of males that have died. The pink dotted line is the cumulative number of females that have died. And then the red dotted line shows the average per week, average numbers per week, cumulative average. And it then also shows, if we look at that week, 1st February and then the second week of February to third week, that our daily deaths are coming down. So what that graph shows is that the deaths increased sharply during the second week of January, then started to decrease again during the third week of January 2021. Northwest currently has a case fatality rate of 1.6%, meaning that 1.6% of people who contract COVID-19 have died. There is our provincial recovery rate that I've listed earlier. And then this 20.7 is the average. If we take from the first time COVID came into the province to now, first time, which was April 2020 to now, our average test positivity rate is 20.7%. And currently, as at 21 February 2021, we had 3,445 active cases. Chairperson, I also won't go through this list, but on the left-hand block, it just shows commonly what people suffer from when they succumb to COVID-19, when they die because of COVID-19. And then the most common comorbidities is in the block on the right-hand side. These, as at 21 February 2021, these are our numbers of our staff in the Northwest Department of Health who are COVID positive. So we've got a total of 4,035, of which 3,912 have recovered. So we've got almost a 97% a recovery rate amongst health workers. Unfortunately, we've had 64 deaths, and it gives us a death rate of 1.59%. Our current active cases as at 21 February 2021 was 59, and then two of our staff were hospitalized because of COVID-19. Chair, the hospitalization curve is very similar to the daily and weekly positivity rate curve. But it also shows that in terms of this olive green part of the bar, that most of our people in hospitals are in our general wards, and a small number are in high care, and then also a small number in intensive care. And the isolation ward, people in isolation, it's so small that year towards the beginning of this year, you can hardly see the blue bar. You could still see the blue bar very nicely during the 27th week, the 28th week, and so on. And then in week seven, a total of, and this is last week, a total of 187 admissions were reported for that week. It's a 40% decrease from the previous week. And then the majority of our admissions are in our West Vaal Hospital. And then it's followed by Tsepong Hospital. And then Wilmed Park is a private hospital that's also got 9% of our admissions. And together, all the other hospitals contributed less than 9% in terms of persons with COVID-19 admitted to them. Chair, I've already said those things that are just written out there. Chair, how did we cope with the second surge? Our emergency medical services played an important role, and fortunately we started strengthening emergency medical services when the administration came into the department in May 2018. They were really the part of our services that we relied on, because we started to feel bed pressures in hospitals such as Job Shimankani Tabani in Rustenburg. Dr. Kenneth Kahunda has a lot of bed capacity because we got a donation of Westwell Hospital from the mines there, up to 200 beds in that hospital. We've got another relationship with private sector whereby there's a Dove Scott Hospital ready for us if we should have bed pressures. We had made extensive, we were able to make extensive additions to the Klaasdorp Sepong Hospital. Chairperson, you probably know this, but I was shocked. I didn't know it. I think I was steeped in administrative issues. I didn't know, even as a country, that we beat extreme drug-resistant TB. I think we didn't even make a fanfare of it. We should have. So on the grounds of Sepong, there's a beautiful wing that was dedicated to extreme drug-resistant TB, which South Africa has now kicked out. And that wing came in very handy for beds, for managing COVID-19 chair. But so as I was saying, the EMS helped us, and we also saw how important it is to at least have some of your districts that don't have high numbers. So Dr. RSM did not have very high numbers, and we could leverage the resources of Dr. RSM and use it in a district such as Bojanala that was starting to feel the pressure. So because we worked hard during the first search for additional beds, we had these beds ready in the second search, and they are listed there. And now the additional bed capacity, which we don't need because the numbers have come down, is now coming in very handy with the vaccination program, because those then become the areas used by the dedicated vaccine sites. If we did not beat the search, if the search was going to continue, we were also going to run into trouble with staffing, but we did not yet run into trouble with staffing. The Northwest Province, when the administration came in 2018, had not filled posts of people who resigned, died, retired for more than 4 years. And so that was a key focus of the administration, and it really stood us in good stead, such that our hospitals and clinics did not have the pressures as we saw from other provinces like Northern Cape and Eastern Cape during this onslaught of COVID-19. During the first search, we had obtained sufficient ventilators. So we had sufficient ventilators, mobile oxygen and the other needed equipment. Although mobile oxygen in the cylinders is not an ideal way to use and get oxygen to patients. So we do have a project now whereby we are installing reticulated oxygen in all our facilities. And this is why infrastructure is a key partner in combating COVID-19. We cannot stress enough that we plead with the communities to adhere to the amended, whatever level we are in, regulations and to prevention measures, because the best way still to fight COVID is for people not to get COVID. With regard to staffing, the three large hospitals, namely Job Shimankana, Thabani, Klaasdorp Sepong, and Mahikeng, were experiencing pressure with regard to staff shortage. This is because large numbers of the staff also contracted COVID-19. And then suddenly on a day, you have 12 less persons in an ICU. And so if the rise in numbers continued, we were also going to be in trouble. The Northwest Department of Health continued to work with the Provincial Treasury to reprioritize available funds to be able to appoint additional staff when needed, because in any case, we need additional staff now to make the vaccination program succeed. In terms of challenges, Chairperson, we currently have two challenges. It's proper contact tracing. You know, if we can't get people's contacts, that's a way that COVID will spread further and further. We find that numbers given to us to get hold of contacts are the wrong numbers, and often people are not found at the addresses we were given for them as contacts. The limited capacity of environmental health in municipalities really showed up to be a key weakness in our prevention strategy. We needed environmental health officers at our borders because often Botswana would test truck drivers from South Africa once they are there, and then immediately want to eject them if they find them to be COVID-19 positive. And so health had to, next to its establishment, appoint additional environmental health officers because that's a key weakness in the system. And we made a recommendation to our EXCO chaired by the Premier that this needs to be looked at as a province, that environmental health services, not just for COVID-19, but other communicable diseases, and just to ensure proper environmental health in the province, environmental health in municipalities needs to be addressed. Staffing for the vaccination program is going to be a challenge, and then also transport for persons to be vaccinated. But I do have a slide where we explain how we are addressing these challenges.
Ms. Hunter, don't you want to change that figure to 4 challenges?
Oh, I have to chair. Yes.
Thank you.
Then we have to stress that people must not get COVID. They must protect themselves. Prevention. Because if we have a third surge and it's even larger than the second surge, bed availability will become a huge challenge, and then reticulated oxygen will also be a challenge. Chair, so we've got nothing that is really red for us, because HR, I must say, we've got a marvelous relationship with Provincial Treasury, and they are very responsive because they don't have more money, but together we can sit and say, with the budget of the health department, how do we change it around to make people available? Because if you don't have people, you burn out the few that's there, and that is a recipe for disaster. Bed availability is green, PPEs is green, equipment is green, drug availability is not a problem. But transport, we had the transport problem even before the vaccination program, because we needed to get our contact tracers out into communities. And also we needed to get our community health workers out into communities to be able to spread the prevention message. But we have subsequently gone into agreements with local taxis, and the transport is also now not red, so we are attending to it. Chair, as the Northwest Department of Health, we are doing very well with managing COVID-19. You will see later that we are off to a very good start with our vaccination program. And we had to sit back and actually say, what is assisting us to do well? Chair, and a key strength of ours is the dedication of our frontline staff and managers. It's the people in our hospitals and our clinics. They are willing to multitask. They take problems in their stride, they immediately think of options for solutions, and they act. And for me, I salute them, especially in the face of large numbers of staff testing positive. I have the head for clinical services of the Clarksville Support Complex. She regularly calls me. She'll call weekends and at any time. Because I gladly take a call. I don't go, oh my gosh, what's wrong now? Because she'll simply share what the problem is, but she'll also have numerous proposals in terms of a solution that normally makes sense. And her and her team, together with the support of the CEO, Mr. Madonsela, they go ahead and they implement and they just move on. Chair, we get good guidance from the Northwest Command Council, which of course gets guidance from the National Command Council, and the strong leadership of the Minister of Health also stands us in good cause. We never have to wonder which way to go now. There's clear direction from the National Ministry of Health. Then action from the Northwest COVID-19 District Command Councils. We have also made a recommendation as the health chairperson to the EXCO chaired by the Premier to say these district command councils must continue post-COVID, because we have learned that they are a good forum for addressing social determinants of health, the housing issues, food security issues, which is important to keep people healthy, gets addressed in those district command councils. Issues that we have with SEPs, it gets addressed there quickly and in a very responsive manner. We've got good cooperation with our provincial treasury, as I've mentioned before. We've got good cooperation with sister departments. Most of those quarantine sites listed in the previous slides belong to our Department of Economy, DDEC, and so we got them for free. We have support from Public Works when we need it in terms of improvements to be made to buildings. So it's with other sister departments, provincial and national, private sector, NGO sector, and also the academia. And then because of the troubles we find as Section 101B in the Northwest Province, consequence management is strong in the department. We also received donations. We got a field hospital from the National Department of Health, and it's there on the grounds of Mafikeng Provincial Hospital. And now it's a state-of-the-art vaccine site. It's now ideally configured for our vaccination program. We've got beds from the National Department of Health. We've got PPE from the National Department of Health, also from the mines in the province, also from insurance companies. And these donations have been given and received following the Public Finance Management Act prescripts with regard to asset management procedures. But then also the Cuban Brigade came at the right time. I must say South Africans were a little bit tentative about South African health workers, about COVID. Can they face COVID in hospitals? What do you do in casualty when you don't know who's got COVID and who doesn't have it? And the Cubans just set an example that brought strength and confidence into those areas. And they really an asset for us in the province. I can speak about what they've been doing for a long time. Chair, just an example, because we are also dealing with malice. We are dealing with fake news being spread on all the media platforms. And so this came to me and I reposted it onto a group. It says, please take note that COVID-19 testing can no longer be done at Sepong Hospital due to computer use for analysis having been stolen. I then put it on the group at 14:39 and I said, any response on the above because it is trending. The same clinical manager I spoke about earlier, she came back and says, COVID testing is done and has never stopped at Sepong. The computer was stolen but was retrieved after a day. The perpetrator was arrested. Laptop was retrieved on Tuesday from the police station. Unfortunately, all programs were deleted, but the supplier managed to load all the programs again. The lab have processed all backlog samples. We no longer have any backlog and are testing today's samples. It's just for me an example of this cooperation that I've been talking about, because one can see that even the police was very responsive via chairperson. And then, of course, I don't know why people even fabricate fake protocols for COVID-19. All kinds of fake documents come out with either National Department or Northwest Department of Health logos. And one just has to be so wary of this and always on the alert and make sure you stamp it fake so that it also goes out the way they spread these fake products. Chair, so risks that remain for the Northwest Province is the cross-border and interprovincial traveling to hotspot provinces, because as we've seen with the first wave and the second wave, the Northwest is not really a province where these outbreaks start, but very soon, because of inter-provincial travel, it does come to the province as well. And rapid rise of infections are fueled by super spreader events, and this is why we're looking forward to getting leadership around the upcoming Easter weekend. And then a risk remains negative social behavior of our people. Excessive alcohol consumption has been proven, because we've now been keeping numbers during times when alcohol is banned and times when alcohol is no longer banned. So it really, really plays a huge role in putting a burden on our casualties, on our operating theatres and our ICUs. And then it crowds out space to be able to manage COVID-19. And venues that are poorly ventilated and then people permit during these super spreader events for these venues to be filled beyond the prescribed capacity. And people who don't use hand sanitizers, they don't wear masks. And then, of course, we need to look at spikes of COVID-19 as employees return to workplaces after the lifting of the lockdown level. Chair, we've learned lessons over this time. Also, when our numbers started to rise, we saw that Western Cape and Eastern Cape, who had higher numbers before us, they were starting to decline in a very positive manner. And so we did do a benchmarking with the Western Cape and the Eastern Cape, but I'll share the lessons in a later slide. So we've learned that COVID-19 is a new, rapidly evolving disease, and we have to work with the knowledge we have at any given time while being continually prepared to respond to the impact of new evidence provided by research. COVID-19 is a societal matter that requires community participation and behavioral changes in the communities to combat spread. National and provincial command councils are key to the required coordinated response. District command councils are key to facilitating the multi-sectoral approach at ground level, which is required to address social determinants of health, and the district command council should continue to function even after COVID-19 has been eliminated. Lockdown measures together with adherence to the Red Toolbox are hugely successful in minimizing transmission. Collaboration with other sectors and government departments facilitates effective responses in both prevention and treatment of COVID-19. Standardized COVID-19 protocols in both public and private sector are important for effective management of the pandemic. And we must say we appreciated the approach and attitude of private sector. They immediately admitted that they don't know about fighting communicable diseases. They work with us. They took on board our protocols and used it in their facilities as well. Adequate staffing is key. Provision of appropriate PPE and psychosocial support for frontline workers are key. Establishment of occupational health and safety committees at all levels, including in mining and big business, is key. Establishment of workplace plans and continuous monitoring of implementation of work plans are key for us. This has been important in the mining sector and the large industries like the cement factories in the Northwest that we work closely with them, looked at their return to work plans for beginning January when the workers were coming back to work, and keep on monitoring together with them how these are being rolled out. Aggressive communication and social mobilization activities, MEC-led, and here we don't mean MEC Health alone, but the MEC must be supported by the other MECs in the province, and this has happened in the Northwest. MEC-led campaigns through different media platforms and community engagement and distribution of materials are key. Ward-based response teams are required to arrest the spread, and this is why we're making a big song and dance about transport, because you need to get your health educators and your contact tracers out to where people live. What we particularly learned from benchmarking with Eastern Cape and Western Cape was that Northwest has a strong comprehensive COVID-19 management and resurgence management strategy, including all the aspects that we found in Eastern Cape and Western Cape plans. We must just say Eastern Cape had strong collaboration with policing, with police services in policing social behavior. And when we presented the full study to our EXCO and put emphasis on that point, our collaboration with the police also improved, and the policing of social behavior also became sharpened in the Northwest province. Similar to those two provinces, the Northwest also have staffing pressures with nurses, doctors, and emergency medical services officers. But this is less severe in the Northwest because of the post-filling drive that started in 2018 and continues to be addressed through consultations with provincial treasury. Northwest province has to increase compliance by citizens since this is a huge problem, and compliance needs to be enforced. I'll finish that sentence now. I just want to say the MEC can tell of the incidences where he actually had to close supermarkets. And most recently, 3 weeks ago, some offices in Wolmaranstad or Zwijzerenneke, just in terms of there being no compliance to COVID-19 regulations from communities in concentrated places. Strengthened environmental health services at the municipal level, that must happen. The Northwest Department of Health contracted additional environmental health officers, but this is not enough. And then we keep on harping on the enforcement of compliance with regulations by SAPS. Chair, I move on to our vaccine rollout. And this is general information about why a vaccine is necessary. So I will not go through it, Chair. But to say this is how we have set our target for the population to be immunized. The Northwest population, the 2020 mid-year estimates show that we have a population of 4.1 million people. And then for us to reach population immunity, we must take that word herd immunity out of our vocabulary because we are not animals. We're talking of people here. Population immunity target is 67% of the population. And that means that we need to vaccinate 2.7 million people if it's a single shot vaccine. But if because we may be getting different vaccines into the country, we are told, if other vaccines that come are vaccines that need booster doses, you of course then your number of shots just double, so your work processes become double. We have 9 pillars in terms of our vaccine rollout plan. It's the governance, coordination, and planning. It's the identification and prioritization of target population, vaccine allocation and vaccination site readiness, human resources, including training and supervision, vaccine administration, maintaining the cold chain, making sure that there's good logistics and infrastructure, safety surveillance, safety surveillance on 2 levels, surveilling people who had gotten the vaccine, but also making sure that there is no theft and pilferage of vaccines and also no sabotage from people with anti-vaccine sentiments. Data management, information systems, monitoring and evaluation, communication and demand creation, and then financing and budgeting. Chairperson, phase 1 is characterized by a situation where there's a limited supply of vaccines. Because of that, it therefore targets the persons at highest risk of acquiring COVID-19 infection. In South Africa, the target group in phase 1 is the frontline healthcare workers, as they are highly exposed to persons having COVID-19. In the Northwest province, the priority healthcare workers are healthcare professionals, non-professionals, support staff in the health facilities, private practitioners, traditional health practitioners, environmental health practitioners. The phase 1 vaccination that started 17 February 2021 will continue for 3 months. Chair, but to say with the first priority in amongst health workers, we went in terms of areas where there's high generation of aerosols. So it's our outpatients, our ICUs, and the theater staff. And then we said in terms of looking at those areas, our first priority in phase 1 are then not just nurses and doctors and physios, but it's also our cleaners who work in those areas. It's our clerks and our administrative staff who work in those areas as well. And then phase 2 of the vaccination program will occur when an increased number and types of vaccines are available. The target groups for phase 2 are essential workers, including personnel in SAPS, education, social development, SASSA, the judiciary, traffic departments, and home affairs. Essential workers in retail, mines, transport industry, big business, and the media. Members of the legislature and traditional authorities, the elderly, those are people above 60 years. Minister Motsoaledi and I were trying to change this, the elderly, back then when he was still the Minister of Health, to 70 years, because we are both 60 and we really don't feel we are elderly people. But I see they still stick to the elderly as people above 60. Those in confinement, such as prisons, those aged above 18 years with other illnesses, and this phase will continue for 6 months. Phase three, this is a continuity phase aimed at vaccinating all other community members not covered in phases one and two. There will be a high number of vaccine doses and type in this phase. The phase is expected to last for 6 months. Chairperson, we must say in South Africa, the vaccine is voluntary. So we are doing health education. We do counseling to convince people that it's better if most of us get the vaccine so that we can have that population immunity and get COVID-19 out of our districts, out of our province, out of our country. So if there are people that when we were busy with phase one, like health workers, who opted not to be vaccinated, but they changed their minds during phase two and three, they will certainly still be vaccinated. It doesn't mean they are cut offs for phases. The phases are just to prioritize those people most in need of the vaccines. But people can come at any stage and say, previously I felt I did not want to be vaccinated, but now I have changed my mind and I want to be vaccinated again. Just to share with you, I won't go through all the pillars, Chair, but just to say in terms of governance, we had made a proposal to EXCO for a consultative platform that would consist of the legislature members and civil society. We also made a proposal for a political steering committee consisting of EXCO members chaired by the Premier. But this third one is not a proposal. This had to be, this third vaccine rollout coordinating team had to be established and become functional before we started the vaccinations, which we did start on 17 February. And these are Department of Health officials, officials from private sector, officials from other health departments, officials from the business and organized labor sectors. And these are coordinating team meetings take place every Tuesday in our province, and it's chaired by the accounting officer, who is myself. Then in terms of the budget, we are talking to Treasury to have a budget for the vaccination rollout in terms of the fact that we need additional staffing, the extra pharmaceutical consumables, the additional networking and computer hardware, because we have learned it's better to not bring paper into this, because we will have to account to the Auditor General in terms of this vaccine use, and it's just better to have an automated system. And so far, the system provided by the National Department of Health seems to be working well, but we have to do extra networking. And we're still in the process of doing extra networking to vaccination sites and then buying extra computers so that we can capture what we do on the computer straight away. Transport of staff to and from vaccination sites. Transport of vaccine from storage points to the vaccine points during phase two. And then additional security features and then communication, particularly payment for radio slots. The sites that we have 23 public sector sites. We have 17 private sector sites, which gives us 40 sites in the Northwest Province. And we will see how we can increase these sites to be able to vaccinate 2.7 million people in the required time. These are the sites, Chair. I'm not going to read them. These are public sites. These are the private sites. And then I also changed the slide. I updated it with the last information we got last night. Your presentation would have the one for the previous day. So when we ended the day yesterday, the country had vaccinated 29,611 persons, and Northwest contributed to that by vaccinating 3,888 people. This is the good start, the graph with the bars, colorful bars on the right side of this graphic shows and talks about the good start that the Northwest has made because in spite the next slide will show the population. In spite of us having a much smaller population than most of these other provinces, we are a third, the province that has so far administered the third largest dose of vaccination. This slide I put in this morning as well, just to show the populations of the different provinces, to show where we are. We're actually the province with the third lowest population. So we're really making a very good start, but it will fizzle out, and because we will only get the number of vaccines for our population. So the previous graph with the colorful lines, we will eventually have to move down in line as the program progresses, because we will only have the amount of vaccines limited for our population. So it's not really a contest, but it's just nice to see how our vaccination sites in the Northwest are doing very well. This one is the more important one, because here you are measured in terms of the size of your own apple. So in terms of the numbers of vaccines we are supposed to administer, if you look at Klaasdorp Sepong, it's about the third facility from the top there on the extreme left column. We are supposed to vaccinate a total of 3,672. And as you go through, it shows out of that how many people have completed the consent. And then there's the consent not completed, but more people, 2,547, have completed that e-consent. And for the same number, the consent was approved. And we also issued vouchers for the same number of people, but now 2,547 people should have come. They've not yet all come. Out of that number, only 1,804 have come, which means we've reached 70.83, almost 71% of our target. And if we go down to our second site, as 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, the 10th line, 10th row, Job Shimankana Tabani Hospital has a total target of 2,149. And then the e-consent was completed for 1,527 persons. This is where the voluntary part comes in, because you can't force people to join the vaccine program. You just need to do health education and counseling. So out of that number, 622 people have opted not yet to register. And so again, 1,527 have registered and applied for the e-consent. That same number of people were approved and then a voucher issued. It means one person was shown to not to be fit to get the vaccine, probably through allergies. So one person was rejected there because the voucher was issued for 1,526. And out of the 1,526, we've vaccinated 1,180 people, which means they achieved against their target, they've got an achievement of 73%, chairperson. The way forward, Chair, we continue to implement our COVID-19 resurgence plans, because we really don't want the numbers to come up again. We continue focus support and care of the frontline health workers. We continue education to strengthen adherence to the Red Toolbox. We continue the current strong focus on contact tracing. We continue the optimal management of sick persons in our hospitals, and then also we continue with the rollout of the coronavirus vaccine in 3 phases. These are recommendations that we did to the EXCO planning, Lekgotla, which the MEC and I attended yesterday and the day before. We recommended to EXCO in terms of COVID-19 and the vaccine that they must develop a plan to strengthen environmental health services at municipal level, and also to develop a framework for converting current district COVID-19 command councils into a platform for managing the social determinants of health post-COVID-19. Thank you very much for this opportunity, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. This is the end of our presentation.
Ms. Hunter, I have enjoyed your presentation so much. You really understand what you are talking to us about. But also thanks for giving us almost what looks like a national picture in some of the slides. But must give credit where it is due. Do tell at this meeting that you're doing well on the rollout vaccination program, but Mpumalanga is really ahead of you. They have more greens there in the Witbank Hospital and the Rob Ferreira. You're coming in second spot. That's a very interesting presentation that I've had. The following members have requested to interact with you. And I would list the order of the honorable members who have requested, and I've seen them. Honorable Gela is number one. There are some pressure points for Honorable Van Staten, so he has withdrawn. The numbers have then shifted. Honorable Gela, you are number one. Number two now with Honorable Wilson. Ismail, number three. Honorable Chirwa, number five. Oh, okay, let me read them the way they were. Now I've been disturbed by this one. Honorable Gela, followed by Honorable Wilson, will be number three. Honorable Ismail, followed by Honorable Chirwa, Honorable Kwahube, Honorable Sokacha, Honorable Thembe Kwayo, Dr. Thembe Kwayo. Anyone that I've left out who has not raised his hand, let me just get this now here on this platform. Anyone would like to add his name or her name?
Masenwa.
Oh, positive.
Mama Ushengwa.
Masenwa.
Oh, positive.
Mama Shengwa, you will come after Honorable Dr. Thembe Kwayo.
Yes.
Any other hand? Any other hand? Let me take them all now. Okay, that's the last one. Please send it now here on the on this platform so that I don't have to read here. I'm giving you that chance now. The last one is Mam Shengwa. Any other person now? Going one, two, and three. Let's do that. Let's start, honorable members, in that order.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation from Northwest Province, our neighboring province. As I'm residing in Gauteng. Indeed, I want to join you. I really enjoyed the presentation, Chairperson, even myself. But nevertheless, there are questions that I want to ask the province of Northwest. In the province received its share of J&J doses for the trial from Orams Rustenburg Clinical Research Institute. Please explain in details the involvement of Orams Rustenburg Clinical Research Institute to us. It is contracted by the department of contracted by the Department of National Department of Health or SAMRC. And then is there a contractual agreement that governs and conduct of all the third parties and ensure the integrity of the process? My number two question is that what is the department plan of addressing the current risk and challenges that you are faced as a province of non-compliance? As we know that we've been having meetings with other provinces, this is our eighth province, if I'm correct. And the issue of health workers being exhausted, I just want to check with the province if there were any complaint of fatigue. If so, what is the support that the province is going to give the healthcare workers? The other issue is about the issue of communication strategy. Do you have any communication strategy in place as a province? The other issue, I know the MEC, MEC Sambata knows very well as a working class.
I just want to know the relationship between the department and the labor in the province. How is the relationship between you as a Department of Health and also the labor in the province? And also, I know in your presentation, you have presented the issue of shortage of staff, but hoping that the Treasury will assist the province in terms of addressing all the challenges that you have faced, particularly the issue of shortage of staff. And I also want to know, actually, as you know, that maybe there will be a third wave. The preparation as a province, what is your preparation for the third wave as a province? And also the monitoring. I know the province, it's a mining province. It's having a lot of mines surrounding the province. Also the relationship with the mines in that province. Lastly, I'm happy when the presenter was indicating that there are brigades that are deployed in the province, and also they are adding value in terms of contribution in the province, which is something that we really also appreciate as a portfolio member, to hear that although you have challenges, but also you have a good story to tell about our brigades that are deployed in the province. Chairperson, I want to thank the province for their presentation, and hoping that whatever challenges that they have faced, they will be able to address when we come again as a portfolio committee, we'll get a positive story. But I'm happy with their rollout strategy for the vaccine, and also the sites that they have indicated to us, and also they have already started to vaccinate the healthcare workers, which is a good move. And lastly, Chair, the area is so vast. I know that we have seen even ourselves as a portfolio members during the public hearing for NHI, which is something that if they can share with us as a portfolio, what is their strategy of communication so that at least it reach everywhere, and also the issue of EMS in their province. With those, Chair, let me thank you for the opportunity, and but also to thank the Department of Health in Northwest for the work they've done despite of the challenges that they have. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Excuse me, Chairperson, can the last slide be removed from our screen, please?
Oh, yes.
Can it be removed, please?
Ms. Hunter,
can Jeanette remove?
Ms. Hunter, take your last slide out of the screen. Honorable Wilson, your opportunity.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And thanks to Jeanette Hunter for the presentation. I think that there's not a person on this portfolio who at this stage envies the situation you find yourself in, particularly with regards to the challenges that the Northwest entire system has faced in terms of administration. And judging by the slides that you've presented, I think that you may have overcome a lot of the challenges with regards to COVID, and certainly in no easy circumstances. So kudos to you, and thank you for the presentation. I do, however, have some questions. And you stated at the outset that one of the biggest challenges you've had in the reason we're continuing with the administration, and which has been a long process already, is that we are obviously, you're obviously waiting to appoint an HOD. You did say there was complications as for, in, with regards to that, but this must be having a serious impact on the management of COVID and particularly the COVID vaccine rollout. Now, I know at the moment you've only received vaccines for two hospitals, and if I'm correct in saying you received 3,900 doses. And with that, you also mentioned that obviously around the IT sector, there's a problem. Now, if you can give us clarity on this, please, Ms. Hunter. The situation with the IT is a critical one in that everybody has to be recorded on a system, i.e., you know, how many people have been vaccinated, where they were vaccinated, and any other circumstances around that, how many vaccines were received. You have given a breakdown of the consent, those who did not consent, those who've been issued vouchers to. But I just want to know that because the data from this process going forward is going to be extremely, extremely critical. And that IT infrastructure actually is in place. One of my major concerns, and I've raised this with every province at the moment, is medical waste disposal. We've had a lot of reports of very bad medical waste disposal. And with the vaccine rollout program, this becomes a critical issue. There have been reports out of China that the vials that the vaccine was used by hospitals and medical facilities there, some of those have been stolen from waste facilities, they've been filled with saline solutions, and people are selling off that saline solution as a vaccine out of a vaccine vial. Can you give us assurance, please, that special attention will be paid to medical waste disposal? This has already created a lot of problems in various other areas. And I know that we are through the worst of COVID at the moment, but there is the potential for a third wave. And one of the biggest complaints we get with regards to the Northwest is the ambulance and EMS facilities. The areas that one ambulance has to cover in the public health sector runs into between 10 and 21,000 kilometers per ambulance. And that is of very, very serious concern as an issue that has to be addressed. We know that prior to you taking over administration, there were huge concerns about a tender that was issued with regards to ambulances there. The fact remains is even it appears that that situation has not evolved. And if you can give us an update of what your preparedness with this and if your EMS facilities have actually been improved upon, particularly in terms of crews and ambulances. And looking at your slides, Ms. Sandra, where you had the comparisons between consents applied, consents issued, vouchers issues, consents, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, on your two hospitals. There is a considerable variance between vouchers issued and vouchers redeemed. Now, could you give us an idea why there is such a variance? Is it because vouchers have been issued to medical personnel in areas that actually are a considerable distance away from the two hospitals that are actually doing the vaccines at the moment? That is a huge concern because obviously, we raised this yesterday in the debate, we can't be taking health workers, doctors or any specialists out of one hospital to move them what could be 100 kilometers or 200 kilometers to go and get those vouchers redeemed. And I think, you know, I'd really like to know if this in actual fact is part of the problem you're facing, because this is something that is going to be, has to be addressed going forward. And if you are aware or if you have any information of what vaccines are still to come for the next, the Northwest province and when you are likely to receive them and in what numbers. Thank you.
Good morning, and thank you for the presentation. I just have a few questions. My colleagues have covered me with EMS, but please, when will the forensic investigation into Buthelezi EMS and HEMS be made available? This issue dates back to 2016, and if you could please give us some, you know, some feedback or report back on this matter. Secondly, please, can you provide a full report on the number of suspensions of senior officials in the department? I think this would give us guidance going forward of what is really happening. Thirdly, on the issue of the medical DAPO accruals, the outstanding amounts are astronomical. So basically, before any payments can be made or current payments, you know, can be made, the department needs to clear the outstanding arrears. This obviously has a negative impact on the procuring of medical equipment, medications, et cetera. Please, can you advise us how far is the department in addressing the arrear payments? And, you know, parallel to that, what was the actual total accrual amount at the beginning of the intervention, if there were any interventions, versus what is the current outstanding arrears? I'm asking this question specifically on the medicine depot. Also, I know that three healthcare centers was in the process of being built. Please, can you give us a progress report on these three clinics, if I can call it that, and who received the contracts to build these clinics and how much did each clinic cost? On the issue of, you know, you specifically explained who are, you know, going to be prioritized for the receiving of the vaccines in phase one and phase two. I just wanted to know, where will people working in frail care centers be considered for vaccines? I've been made aware that somebody from working at a frail care center has been trying to get onto the system to get a vaccine, but unfortunately, you know, was not allowed. I've got a few more questions. What is the status of the healthcare workers versus the established force? If there's a deficit, I know you've explained the need, but if you could explain to us or give us a report back on it, the categories and the plans to fill these posts. Lastly, the Cuban doctors have been filled. I just wanted to know how many interns or community service doctors have been placed in the province. Have they been paid, and is the department considering integrating them into the system? You haven't touched on the mortuaries a lot. If you could give us a report on the mortuaries and how are they coping. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation as well to the provincial department. I have a few questions here. There's practically to no public transport in many parts of Northwest of the province. And this subsequently means that your EMS should be one of the strongest in the country. But this is not the case. Can we have an EMS breakdown in detail, in much more detail than what was given in the presentation? How many EMS vehicles do we have in the province, and how are they distributed in the province? Particularly, I'm interested in the distribution in rural and township areas in the province. And secondly, infrastructure is a general challenge in many provinces, especially provinces where rural areas still exist quite prevalently, so is in the Northwest. But can we have details for the purposes of ensuring that even on our side as portfolio committee members, we're able to present to the minister like detailed requests or follow-ups or questions as well, because then it becomes a futile exercise to present infrastructure as a vague problem where there aren't, in the very least, you know, there isn't an attempt to highlight four or five health facilities. So in the same breath, can we have like details on, as according to you, how many health facilities in the province need urgent a refurbishment, an infrastructural intervention, just details about the situation of those particular health facilities. And secondly, in relation to that, how will this infrastructural challenge in those facilities that you will tell us about, how will it affect mass vaccination? Because also that is the direction that I think provincial departments to start looking towards in terms of readiness. I should go just beyond fridges and office size or storing size, but should go beyond. Like, do people have a place to wait on in the queues to add on to the strain and overburdening of overpopulation in health facilities and clinics? And there's obviously special cases, especially in rural areas. I can think of many from the top of my head in Taung, not even of many because there aren't a lot of health facilities, but I can think of quite a few from the top of my head in Taung in particular, which won't be able to handle mass vaccination if it were to happen in April, for example. So if you can just finish us with, you know, less vague. I mean, we get the gist of what is happening, and I appreciate the presentation. I think you went in detail, but I think we can break borders in relation to how we want the portfolio committee to intervene in the issues that provinces face. And you know better than we do. So if you can just, you know, prioritize two or three and break down and tell us that this particular facility in Mukharing or Extension 6 is an issue because of 123, the vacancy rate is at 20%, and all of those issues, but like a more detail-based breakdown of the kinds of interventions we can also look towards in terms of serving the portfolio committee. And lastly, I particularly have interest in Taung because I know that health in that particular area, health facilities, are pretty much collapsed and debilitated beyond comprehension, really. And so I want to know, where are the vaccination sites in Taung in particular? In which health facilities do we have vaccination sites in Taung? Thank you very much, Jefferson.
Thank you very much, Chair. My question, I only have two very specific questions. The one, I mean, it relates to what I wanted to speak about earlier, about the issue of the appointment of the HOD and the administration, the Section 100 administration for the province. I mean, I understand that we were told by the province that there have been complications around the appointment of said HOD, but the reality is that in order for the province to have stable leadership and be able to function and get out of an administration, because ultimately, I mean, this is not a sustainable way of doing healthcare or rolling out healthcare services in the province. This has been ongoing now for many years, and even though we were told that this is a complicated process that would take a very long time to articulate, I would be very interested in finding out where to from now, because, you know, the province can't be governed under administration in perpetuity. Clearly, there has to be some kind of urgency to fix the situation and to fix it very quickly, because ultimately, we have to have people that we are going to be holding accountable. And it's quite important if we can just get some clarity on what the way forward is on that and what are the possible timelines that we are looking at in terms of being able to have stable leadership in the province. And then my last question is related to the vaccine rollout readiness. Phase 2 and phase 3 are obviously a lot more complicated than phase 1, because you are looking at, particularly for provinces like the Northwest, you are looking at mass vaccination and rollout in very rural parts of the province. And so I just want to understand, in terms of a primary healthcare strategy, is the province confident that those primary healthcare facilities that will be identified as distribution sites that in fact are ready to be able to be, you know, nodes for the communities that they are in? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, let me also welcome the presentation from Ms. Hunter, and also thank the MEC. Just 2 points, Chair. The first one, I think the Honorable Geller have asked it. it's around their communication strategy. Ms. Andama, just elaborate what I'm just interested in their communication strategy. How are they communicating throughout the province in terms of making sure that people are taking this vaccine and so on? Then the second one, Chair, is around the ambulances. Ms. Andama said the ambulances, they are making use of the ambulances. That is, the ambulances are assisting them very well. So it means that the ambulances are very busy in the Northwest, and therefore I'm interested to know on their crew. Is it a one-man crew or two-man crew? What is their crew? How many people are, you know, driving these ambulances, and how many of them are in the ambulances to assist and so on? Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think it's my turn.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to say to the administrator who was doing the presentation here, Ms. Janet Hunter, I heard you saying a lot of staff are taking advantage, and there is strict discipline. You know, the terms taking advantage, referring to your staff, inclusive of the health workers. According to me, it means, Sam, the poor staff don't have a platform to say to you that they are not feeling well because of the way in which you are administering the province. As other, even if you can say, you have mechanisms in place for addressing whatever psychological problems that the staff would be going through, but the manner in which you are administering the province, they are even afraid to come and tell you that they have a problem because you'll never ever give them a chance to. My feeling is you have stayed too long in the province. The sooner you make an exit and go back to the national department, the better, so that the province can be able to run their own affairs effectively without your interference. Number two, in connection with the traditional healers, surprisingly, nothing has been said about the involvement of the traditional healers in this process, which obviously means the province doesn't take any consideration of involving them into this process. My question is that there is an allegation, there is an alleged message that said the traditional healers were once invited into the meeting. I think it was verbally or what, but just towards the meeting, they were left out, which obviously means they didn't become part and parcel of the very first important meeting that was about the COVID-19 pandemic. I just would like to know, to say, why are the traditional healers not taken into consideration in the province? Who is that one? Who is preventing them to be part of the whole negotiations? The third point, do you have any person who is related to you or to the province in health-related matters who has secured some contracts for COVID-19 related procurements? If there are, can you finish us with whoever they are before the media come and pounce on the province? So it's better to tell us now that there is this fraudulent discovery of the middlemen in the contracts procurement of the COVID-19 related thingy. So according to me, it's very important for the staff to be done accordingly. We are waiting for the appointment of the HOD ASAP. The June that you are talking about, the problems that we have, it's not supposed to be entertained now, because I just feel the administration, the province has been under administration for quite a long time. The sooner you make your exit, the better. Thank you.
Tip, meeting tools.
I'm done.
Unmute.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Alt plus A button. Mute. Currently unmuted. Alt plus A button. Tooltip. Start this.
First of all, let me welcome the presentation from...
Imagine, Mama.
Yeah.
Parliamentary staff, who is that voice? Whose voice is that one in the background? Please remove that voice that is just coming now. It's a male voice. It looks like the machine talking. Go ahead, Mama. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Dinangwe. First of all, let me welcome the presentation. And I have surprised and very reluctant to Ms. Hunter. In her presentation, she was not presenting the Northwest Northwest Health Department, but seemingly it was the overall of the national, because she touched all the provinces, comparison, doing the compare it. I don't know if there is, if the administrator was doing that. It was wrong to touch all the provinces, because we are waiting for the Northwest report. I need the clarity on that. Secondly, in terms of oxygen and in terms of infrastructure,
has left the meeting.
Is there any measure put in place to overcome with the shortage of oxygen and infrastructure? Because in Northwest, there are shortage of infrastructure, clinics, and etc. Is there put in place measures put in place to overcome that? Northwest is a very high, has a very high temperature. The vaccine needs cooler or a cool temperature. From another spot to another spot, is there any measures put in place to control the temperature so that the vaccine reach that point in a good manner? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. My last one will be, Honorable MEC, we might probably as a portfolio require a letter detailing what you are saying with regards to the HOD. We will need that letter because we do not want to say we understand everything. And I don't think Ms. Hunter is there because she wants to stay there. It's just that your systems and let go of her are just not permitting. Please do touch that again so that we understand it clearly. But I will still think that you need to write to us a letter detailing the steps, the June part, and we can look into that. Is it something that we can be appreciative? Because then we could then be able to engage the minister what is happening in that regard. I mean, for all I care, Ms. Hunter has a lot of other work that she needs to do nationally. And currently the chief director who's standing in for her in doing that work. And therefore it's not that work must not be done in the national, but so I think we really need that. It's really long that there's this process. I would really like to hear your comment, but followed up by a letter to us, written to the chair that I can share with the committee. Number two, Ms. Hunter, I would like you to educate me more, but if maybe you don't take all the time here, but the issues about district command councils, how you find them effective, I might probably need that even outside this meeting just to get that understanding clearly. Don't spend too much time on it, but just to educate me a bit about what you said in regard to that one. On your slide 27, you mentioned that you need additional staff to assist with the vaccination. I'm not sure whether it's a vaccination program for phase one or is a vaccination for the subsequent phases. If you can share that with us, it will assist. I also found that you talked about 29,000 as of end of yesterday. So I was able to make a rough calculation because the minister presented to the National Assembly yesterday 23,000 almost. So it means it's about 6,000 per day countrywide that we are doing vaccinations. How is this information feeding into, is there a center where this information is coming in? And I could see some of the people were downloading it yesterday. I just want to be educated as to where one could find it on this matter. Continue to tell us if you would have challenges to have backup fridges in some of your vaccination sites, because this vaccine is sensitive to a particular temperature, as Mam Shenga was saying. So please give us an indication, how strong are you in having backup generators in the event that your fridges may not always depend on Eskom? Honorable, so let me see. What is the value add of the Cuban program in your province? Now that it was mentioned, I just want to check what is that value add in that. You mentioned, Honorable Ms. Janet Hunter, that some of our staff members were a bit reluctant to get into the phase of vaccination. Did you have, I missed out if you did mention a figure or percentage or roughly, but I hear that you are saying, yes, you won't close the space for them subsequently if they so decide to then want to get vaccinated later in life. I hope you'll continue classifying yourself and some of us as the early elderly, or early elderly, 60 and up to, and then you can late elderly. You tried your best. I remember you didn't make, you didn't pass. Maybe let's give you now. The last one, because you also have a bit of national. I heard, and that there's a possibility. Except for J&J, which is, we are told, is the one vaccine, then we are done. I hear there's a possibility that you can be given a Moderna vaccine, and then maybe it is not available, but maybe later the booster can be something else. Is that something that science is actually closing up on it now? If you do, but if you don't know it, I don't really want to hold you on that part. It's just something interesting that I saw on the platform of debate. Thank you, Ms. Hunter and MEC. Give us your responses.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I'll ask the administrator and management to be the first one so that I can deal with the other issues that they may not deal with, especially the issues that deals with the administrator in person, but the issues that deals with the THP's involvement, the Cuban program and the administration, I'll cover them later. Let them answer on the practical ones they are expected to answer, Chair. Thank you. Administrator.
Thank you, MEC. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Honorable members. So the first question was about the involvement of the Aurum Research Institute in this first rollout of the vaccine. Honorable Chair, the conditions under which we could get this J&J to vaccinate our especially priority frontline workers is under research conditions. They call it a phase 3B research, whereby the vaccine was already through previous research declared safe, secondly declared efficacious. But they still needed more information. So the Honourable Chair and the members will remember that we were ready to start our vaccine rollout with the AstraZeneca vaccine. It arrived in the country. It was going to be dispatched to the provinces for the vaccination program. But it was then found that the AstraZeneca vaccine was not efficacious for mild and moderate disease. In terms of the new variant that they believe drove the second surge in South Africa. The AstraZeneca vaccine was then abandoned in terms of South African purposes. I know there were purposes found for it, but I don't have that specific information, so I won't speak about that. The priority for the country, Honorable Chair, is to get the frontline workers vaccinated. And also as many of the population as soon as possible, because that is a key way how we can prevent a third and subsequent surges. Now, the research project belongs to the Medical Research Council of South Africa, headed by Professor Glenda Gray. And research organizations like Sisonke and Aurum, and Aurum is in the Northwest, but others research organizations are in other provinces, has then contacted to work with the Medical Research Council. So yes, I think the Honorable Member who asked this question is right, that it is a national process driven by the MRC, and Aurum and other research organizations then work with the MRC. There is no relationship between the province and the MRC, thus there is no relationship between the province and Aurum Research Institute. Those vaccines come from national to the research facility, where it is then distributed for the Northwest to the two sites. But we actually physically have three sites. It's Klerksdorp Hospital, Tshepong Hospital, but it's seen as one site because Klerksdorp Tshepong is a complex, and then Job Shimankana in Rustenburg. Then in terms of exhausted healthcare workers, as I said, we were fortunate that we were since 2018 on filling vacancy drives. When the Section 101B administration came into the province, we had an overall vacancy rate of 20%. That vacancy rate is now at 14%. I think it also answers a question asked by another member. MECs, we shared with the committee on one of our slides all our public sector sites. MEC Sambata and I visited all those sites except for Matibistat, which we were going to visit today, but we had to postpone because we needed to honor this this engagement with the committee. We visited the sites to make sure that the sites are ready in terms of the prescripts given to us by National, make sure that they have enough space, including waiting space in shade and sheltered from elements, as one of the members have also asked. And also we wanted to meet the actual vaccinators in person. And I can report, and MEC Sambata will support this, that our staff are in high spirits. Our staff have been taking leave. Our staff have been falling sick and they got the prescribed time to recover from the sickness. We have appointed with the COVID-19 funds a large number of additional social workers and psychologists to be able to give counseling to staff who fall sick, counseling to staff who feel that they are overburdened. In that space, Honorable Chair, unfortunately, you do find workers, and I use the word take advantage because it's a bona fide English word. It's also not a swear word. We unfortunately had staff who took advantage of general regulations, passed by the Minister of COCTA when it comes to lockdown levels. Health department staff in specific areas did not qualify to work from home, like, for example, other office-bound staff did. Because even if you're an administration staff in the head office, for pharmaceutical supplies to arrive at the depot and to be distributed to our hospitals, we need you to be at work, because unfortunately, government's information systems managed by the CITA, SITA, run off specific networks which you can just access in government buildings. It's not the kind of network that you can run sitting at home. And we had to act on staff who refused to come to work because they want to follow the generic lockdown levels. And we acted on them within the confines of the labor law of this country, because you can't have a health system fall down because you want to be lenient on staff who who wants to practice their religion when it comes to their duty. Chairperson, communication strategy, yeah, we've got an excellent communication strategy driven from the Premier's office, supported by other departments, and health department is a key support partner because COVID-19 is a health condition. And our communication strategy covers slots by Premier. All the MECs work together. It's not, they have not made COVID-19 an MEC Sambata problem. COVID-19 is a problem of the Premier and all the EXCO. So there's TV appearances by the Premier and the MECs. There are radio slots on local radio so that there's communication in local languages. Our paper communication also translated to the most prominent local languages. We have our health promoters out in the communities on loud hailers. And we also have those screening, those mobile outreach screening sites where health education is given. There's also the constant communication with the staff as well. And I must say, when MEC and I visited the sites, our staff are in high spirits. Yes, we are worried about whether we will have the right numbers of staff, and it is for phase two onwards, Chair, because it will be less complex to manage the health workers and all those other essential workers who are listed in phase one. But when we move out, there was a question about where does people in care homes fit in. People in care homes will come under that category of over 60 and people with comorbidities. If someone is perhaps not 60, but they are in a care home because of sickness, they will come under that category, and we'll surely do outreach to those centers. Chair, there was a question about the department's relationship with labor, with organized labor. The department has a healthy relationship filled with tension, with an healthy tension because organized labor, it must be like that. The department has a stewardship role to play, that there must be proper governance, and we need to comply with the regulations of the PFMA and also the Department of Public Service and regulations. And organized labor has a role to represent their members and to make sure their members are treated fairly in terms of the work situation. So there's those differences, but we have the different fora within the department where we meet with organized labor at different levels and we communicate. But the Northwest Department of Health has its unique history with organized labor. When the Section 101B administration came in May 2018, the workers were outside. A large proportion of the workers were agitating in front of government buildings, in the street, and so on. And there had to be several meetings, even at president level, with organized labor concerning Northwest. There were meetings of the IMTT led by Minister Nkosi Sanu Dlamini-Zuma, with organized labor, and there was then an agreement signed on the 19th of May 2018 through which those employees of the Department of Health who were outside in the streets had to come back to work. There, unfortunately, Chairperson, were those elements who then saw the administration as an instrument towards their own means. So who wanted to continue what they accused other groupings that they were toying about, wanted to do the same, get involved in supply chain matters, get to prescribe to supply chain which companies must get which business and so on. And of course, as an administration, we would not allow them. And those people tried to do this under the guise of they represent the union, official union. And I must say, just sticking to our guns, applying consequence management, applying discipline. We even got the union to unions to admit that, no, these members are not acting on our in our name. And some of those members got expelled from the union because if over time it became clear that they were sowing anarchy for own personal means instead of having bona fide gripes. And because of what is happening in the Northwest, it's no secret, those keep coming up in different areas, trying to agitate bigger groupings of workers to show dissatisfaction. But because we're a department at work, from the MEC, the administrator, our executive management, we manage those because we can soon prove that there is no case for workers to be out agitating on the street. So in short, I can say we've got a very good relationship, but a good relationship with organized labor doesn't mean you are friendly with them. There's always that tension because you have to stand your ground as an employer and they have to stand their ground as representatives of employees. Chair, we remain in constant preparation for the third wave because the best thing would be if there is no third wave. And so that is convincing South Africans to take the vaccine. That is convincing South Africans, please continue wearing masks, respect physical distancing, keep to hand and cough hygiene, and let's not go and gather in big groups in inside venues. Where if one is sick, we cause a spread of the condition. But in terms, if we can't avoid a third wave the way we couldn't avoid a second wave, our hospitals were prepared during the first surge, and we'll be able to manage it to an extent. If numbers skyrocket, we will never have enough beds. We will never have enough oxygen and you will never have enough staff because you do have a limited purse. So the best thing for us to do is to keep the numbers down. Chair, even if there is a third wave, let it be a low wave and not a high wave. Yes, Chair, we did receive about 3,900 dosages. And one of the members have asked about the big difference between those that were okayed and whether e-permission was actually granted and where they have actually taken it up. So it is because we actually make appointments. So because this Johnson & Johnson vaccine is currently administered under a research protocol, the hospitals that were chosen throughout the country must be close to the research centers because the vaccines were delivered to the research centers. And therefore, a hospital like Klerksdorp and Sepong has been receiving the POTS staff. They've been receiving staff from all the private sector hospitals in that area. So we make appointments. We were given 14 days. I think it was the 17th on a Wednesday, like today it's a week. Yeah, or was this, yeah, the 17th was either Wednesday or Thursday, I'm not clear now. But so either today or tomorrow it will be a week, and it means then we have another 7 days to finish the dosages that were given to us. And so it is probably those people who have already received their approval are now waiting for the date that they were given to come. For example, private GPs were given Sundays. They were given past Sunday and this Sunday to come, but we did invite the private GPs and some of them actually came Saturday and Sunday. We are hoping, Chair, that we will soon get vaccinations that we can administer ordinarily outside of a research protocol, the way the current vaccine is being administered, because then we can go to all our sites. And then I think that gap will also be reduced between those who had gotten their permission and those who actually came to have themselves vaccinated. Chair, the IT challenges is the networking and hardware challenges of the Northwest Department of Health. It is actually sad that in 2021, we still need to be struggling with networking our facilities and getting computers to facilities. It should long have been done, but it has been a very neglected area in the department. And when we came as administration, there were other priorities, and IT also again took a back bench, or had to go backstage. But this software system from National is called EVDS. Electronic vaccine data capturing system seems to be working very well. Our vaccine sites end at 7 o'clock, and by 9 o'clock in the evening, the information staff are able to update us. Chairperson, please allow me to get the exact protocol, or I'll ask Mr. De Beer, maybe he should still be on here, if he can say how the software can be accessed, because you asked that question to say, how do you and perhaps the members access those updates in terms of the software? Either Mr. De Beer will answer, or if he doesn't, then we'll also document the protocol for accessing the software in the written response that we'd have to send you, because you are right, there's quite a few things which we will have to send to you in writing, and I'll highlight them as I get to them. But so the honourable member is right. The data processing becomes very important for us to have an epidemiological picture that will help us with future endemics or pandemics, but also for the auditor general processes. Once you start mixing a paper system with an electronic system, and your paper numbers doesn't balance with your electronic numbers, the AG is simply going to say disclaimer. So we have to make sure that we are enabled to use the software properly so that we can provide the data in a transparent manner. Chairperson, when it comes to waste disposal, we have not had problems since 2018. We've got very good suppliers, and so we've not had the problems the province had before, where there were newspaper articles of illegal dumping of waste and so on. But the member's question was particularly about the vaccine. Yes, as part of the training, the vaccinators undergo extensive training and they actually get certified as vaccinators. As part of the training, they are taught to break the vials. And we've got those hazardous containers as prescribed by law, which the broken vial together with the needles go into, and it is disposed properly through our disposal companies. The EMS facilities is one of those, Chair, that we'd like to give to you in a written report so that we can show you our staffing against the national norm. And you will see that we still fall short in terms of the national norms for numbers, but we have done much better. We have improved the situation that we found in 2018 with regard to EMS. We have purchased a large number of emergency medical response vehicles. One of the members had alluded rightly to the fact that the Northwest doesn't have public transport. And so amidst the vehicles that we purchased is also planned transport vehicles, but we still don't come close to what is required in terms of national norms. And this is where the alcohol ban becomes very important. If ambulances are freed, and we saw it work in the second search, Chair, in that we could use our EMS to transport sick patients to where there was bed space. But those vehicles were freed from attending to large numbers of motor vehicle accidents. They were freed from going to frequent call outs for violence, injuries due to interpersonal violence, and therefore we coped. But under normal South African circumstances, where we have this high incidence of motor vehicle accidents on our roads, high incidence of interpersonal violence at homes or in taverns, the EMS get tied up in those kinds of calls. And if they're not free to attend to other priority conditions. So we will provide a report on EMS against the norms in terms of staffing, in terms of our crew as well, and in terms of the vehicles as they are distributed across the four sub-districts. Also, we have appointed a large number of qualified EMS officials, and we don't have single man crews anymore. And also, let me then also bring in the issue of the Buthelezi here. The Buthelezi investigation is with the Hawks. We completed our contract with Buthelezi. But in 2018, when we came, we stopped all payments to Buthelezi because some of the members will remember that Buthelezi was overpaid. And we then went into a reconciliation process with Buthelezi. And we deducted over time some of that money because we reached the stage where we owed Buthelezi. They no longer owed us because we stopped paying them. That we owed them and we could deduct the extra payments, but also we got an order from SARS that the large portion of the money we owed Buthelezi had to be paid to SARS, and that process was completed. As the Northwest Department of Health, we do not have a relationship with High Care and Buthelezi anymore. Their cases is with the Hawks. And when we do the report, we can actually give the contact number of the person of the Hawks that will work with that case so that the Hawks could perhaps provide the portfolio committee with that information. I must mention, however, because lives have to be saved, we do still contract a private EMS. As I said, when you look at our staff numbers and our vehicles in terms of national norms, we fall short. So there where we don't have availability, we do make call outs to private sector ambulances in our four sub-districts. Chair, we do not know when we will get what vaccine next. We are looking forward, the minister usually would call a special NHC and share information with us. So we are looking forward to that meeting, which the minister, I think, will shortly call to share with us information about future vaccines coming into the country. Chair, the numbers of people under suspension and general reasons why they are under suspension, we also asked if we could give that to you in a report. The medical depots, astronomical accruals, yes. The medical depots accruals are around half a billion. And because our total accruals is just under a billion. And it's standing knowledge now in the province between us and provincial treasury, that unless we get the extra money, that accrual will stay. Because we cannot withhold medication from the people of the Northwest. So what happens? Right now, we are in February. We run out of money for medicines in January. We negotiate with our companies. We make smaller payments, and they continue to give us medication because it's a life-saving activity. Then come 1 April, between 1 April and June, we pay off our accruals and we start now fresh. And so it's a cycle like that, and it will not go away until we get that shortfall. We do have a shortfall of budget. And the sad thing for us was that we work very well with our COVID-19 budget as Northwest Department of Health. And we actually, after the first surge, had an agreement with Treasury through the Exco that health would be able to use that money to make the medicine accruals less. But unfortunately, the second surge came. We had to appoint people again, buy more PPE, continue with the renovations that we thought we could stop. And so that money was no longer available to pay off that accrual. So that accrual will stay there. Chair, if I could just have more clarity, one of the honorable members had asked about the clinics that were built, who were the contractors and the amounts. I missed out on the names of those clinics. So if we can get the names of those clinics, that's information that we can also give in a report, Chair. We can also give a fuller table with more specific information on our vacancies. Per cadre and the vacancy rate per cadre. But I had said that we brought the vacancy rate down from 20% in 2018 to 14% now. Chairperson, with regard to interns and professionals who have to do community service, the Northwest Province prioritizes these professionals. We make sure that we have money to contract our interns because they need to do that in order to qualify. We make sure that we have funding to employ those professionals who have to do community service because they need that for them to be able to qualify and enter the job market. What we don't have money for, Chair, is to year on year absorb professionals who have already completed community service. It just stands to reason, Chairperson, our budget has not remained stagnant, it has actually shrunk. Treasury has cut for the next 3 years, the first years, even this year that we are right now, which is the 2021 year, they've cut our budget. Next year's budget is cut, the third year's budget is cut, and they had issued that those cuts must come from COE, compensation of employees. So our money has shrunk. You can't year on year appoint extra cadres. At some stage, even the appointment process has to go and stand still to fit into the budget. So that is something that our professionals in the country will have to learn. When lawyers qualify, they are not guaranteed a job. When accountants qualify, they are not guaranteed a job. And it just makes rational sense that health departments cannot continually. We don't have the budget for it. So those are the people we can't employ, but interns and people who have to do community service are prioritized. We will also give a report about our mortuary services. We will give a detailed report about infrastructure. We do have those reports. We know exactly which facility, which primary healthcare facilities need what kind of upgrade. We know exactly what needs to be done to which hospitals. We do have that information, and we can make that available, Chair. I think the Chair has given a ruling, and maybe MEC will speak to it, about the appointment of the HOD. Vaccine readiness, I did say that MEC and I personally inspected the sites. There were two sites that were found not to be up to scratch, was Khanyisa Hospital in Dr. RSM and Leerutsi Hospital in Nakamudiri Molema in the Zierist area. And those two facilities are busy getting the assistance to get ready, because we need all these facilities to function if we're going to cover the numbers that we have to cover. Chairperson, we have a very good relationship with our traditional healers. In fact, there's a special directorate called Directorate for Special Programs that form part of traditional healers. The traditional healer representative received a signed letter from MEC to be part of the COVID-19 vaccine roll out coordinating committee. And fortunately, Chair, we do it through virtual meetings. There's attendance registers and there's also recordings of the meetings. So there were no persons appointed by the MEC to be part of the committee that were excluded from any meeting, Chair. We've also communicated where our traditional healers fall in our prioritization with the different phases of the vaccination. Chair, we do have an active project now to get reticulated oxygen into our hospitals. We've never been short of oxygen. We've never been short of oxygen, but I think people who are health professionals on this a meeting this morning will know that it's not the best way, it's not good practice to be carting oxygen along in cylinders. So we have enough cylinder oxygen, but we need to get the reticulated oxygen straight to the bed, and that's the project that we are doing now, Chair. Chair, the district command councils to give brief, we will also include in our report their TOR and so on, but they are chaired by the executive mayor of the largest municipality in that health district. And by virtue of the position of that executive mayor, she or he wields the power over all the departments. So, for example, when Public Works was tardy to get specific quarantine sites up to date, she could crack the whip. I'm now thinking of this example of the Dr. KK mayor, and that's why I'm saying she, because I attend some of these meetings and I just sit quietly, I just do the health presentation, but I'm just in awe of how well run those meetings are and how departments are pulled in to work together. In terms of physical space to assist the health, it was in terms of the food program for food insecure families and so on, but we will give more information also in a written report, Chair. And I did say yes, we will definitely need more vaccinators for the subsequent phases, because the numbers are just daunting. This is the biggest program the country has ever had to roll out. As I said, MEC and I inspected the sites, and we wanted to meet the vaccinators in person to make sure they are really vaccinators. We looked at the fridges available to store the vaccines, whether they meet the WHO standards that were prescribed to us by the National Department of Health. We also made sure that these facilities have backup generators. Chairperson, as I said earlier, I've got no information. MEC will say if he's got, but I've got no information on future vaccines. If I can just check if Mr. De Bruin can speak to Access, or does he prefer that we respond in writing? Mr. De Bruin, Access to the information system?
Afternoon, Chair. Afternoon, Honorable Administrator. Honorable members. MEC. Yes, we currently, the system is the property of the National Department of Health, or is administered by the National Department of Health. So for now, they've only given access to one person per province, and then obviously persons at national. But we will try and engage with national to see whether how the information can be distributed further. Maybe in terms of having a dashboard on the National Department of Health website or something like that, but we will engage them. But for now, as indicated, the access is only limited to one person per province, which is the information officer, and then officials at National Department of Health. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. That's the end of our response. I don't think there's any other official, so I suppose it's over to the MEC Chair.
Let me get in, Administrator and the Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee. Chair, let me start with the issue of the Section 101B administration. The administration, of course, is managed and coordinated by IMTT on behalf of the National Cabinet, then supervised by National Council of Provinces. What we have currently is a situation that there was a session between the administration IMT and the Provincial Executive Committee EXCO. And during that period, the administration indicated milestones in terms of successes and challenges faced by the administration. Then they presented areas that are still pending for administration to finish. Of course, with an action plan on when those would be finished. The last discussion we had was that departments who were 100B were going to be upgraded based on their performance to 100A. And then departments who were A, based on their performance, they then could be managed differently. But what had happened is that when they did assessment and presented to the NCOP, which supervises the process, they then concluded that there were elements which were pending, with one of them in our case, it's appointment of the HOD. And I don't want us to look on this one. I wanted to look to the two, the one of correcting the budget baseline and the one of correcting the budget for pharmaceutical services. You can appoint the HOD and then celebrate that, wow, we're out of administration. What we are going to have, we are going to have a Department of Health Northwest still underfunded, and a Department of Health Northwest still underfunded on pharmaceuticals budget. The issue that we sometimes have inability to pay and therefore have increased accruals has to do with the fact that all of us each year we adopt a budget. We know that which we have budgeted for on pharmaceutical supplies, it's not what is needed practically, but it is because we are managing resources that are dwindling and allocations that get shrinked each year. So the issue that is pending, it's appointment of the HOD and the issue of pharmaceuticals budget and the issue of correcting the budget base line. Someone, Honorable Chairperson, who says, wow, Administrator, you have overstayed your welcome. I can tell you, that person does not know the reality. The reality in the Department of Health in Northwest is that had there been no administration, the Department of Health Northwest could have collapsed. Remember, one district had already collapsed, where South African Defense Force had to take over running hospitals. Ngaka Mudiri Mulema had collapsed. Hospitals were run by Defense Force. All this has been addressed, and everything that we needed to have a proper running department is in place. I can tell you, someone who says you have overstayed your welcome, it's on the basis of people who are in Department of Health, hell-bent to impose anarchy in the department. It's on the basis of the people who are in the Department of Health, hell-bent to loot the resources of the state. Let me give you a practical example, Chair. On the people who are asked to supply a list on who are suspended, some of them are in a unit called DTIS. And is the one here in front of the things that those people have choose of. One of them is the fact that in one project, they paid.
Point of order, Chairperson.
They paid.
Point of order, Chairperson.
Honorable Thembekwayo, what is that point of order?
I'm not someone. I'm Honorable Dr. Thembekwayo. Please.
The problem is that doctor only provincially you have that problem. I'm not addressing her as a person who has a problem on the matter. Provincially, we do have a problem of a mobilization on anti-administration. I can't address a doctor and a member of parliament. On the issue of administration.
Sorry, I'm the one who presented the problem, so I don't need to be generalized. Sorry.
No, on that one, it was not meant against you, Honorable Member. My apology on that one. The issue then is, I'm saying one practical example is that a contract is appointed and then people pay in advance contract escalations. The first day of the contract being on site, the contractor has already paid contract escalation fees in advance, which fees are not determined by the Department of Health, but they are determined on the basis of the economic performance of the country and on the economic adjustment of prices. But these officials could even project prices that they have no control on them. So there's an element that had creeped on in the department. That of individuals who have been running the department personally with impunity, even on things that were wrong. So that component is an issue that we're focusing on, but the administration, I'm saying, will then be determined by cabinet. We are told now it's 3-month extension. Which 3-month extension still cabinet says appointment of HODs on all departments that under Section 100, you would also recall that Northwest, it's 5 departments under Section 100B and 5 departments under Section 100A. Those departments include the Premier's office. So for now, we are guided by that 3-month extension. The second one is the issue of the Cuban Brigade. The question you've asked and the question Honorable Goliath asked, in the issue of the Cuban Brigade, first, on the ones we send to Cuba to start the medicine, the value we are deriving from them, it's on the basis of the attitude, but also on the basis of the character we get of doctors that come from that program. The reason also that we think that the Cuban program is still helping South Africa, it's on the basis that when you're talking about re-engineering of primary health care, these doctors trained from Cuba come handy in that program of re-engineering of primary health care. They do give value, but the other value that they do, they are also good in communication, especially working relationship in the sites they would be deployed to. If you were to check the ones we received for COVID-19, if you go to West Val, the one that we are told has a higher number of admissions, those Cuban professionals deployed there, without asking the department or asking the additional money, they simply made the arrangement that the two of them are going to split 2 weeks, 2 weeks. One is going to sleep in the facility for the rest of the 2 weeks. The other one would sleep in the next 2 weeks. So they are increasing the level of availability of trained professionals in that element. That's a Cuban program. The next one, I think that the issue of ambulance services, the administrator covered it. But Honorable Wilson and Honorable Chira, I think that they are correct on the issue of distribution and proper distribution of ambulances. But what we have agreed now of late is that for Honorable Chiron's question, each time we purchase ambulances, we have an added design of rural response so that we do have ambulances designed for rural terrain. So
so that we don't keep arguing the status of our roads and accessibility purely because our ambulance designs do not conform with terrains that need cars that are for rural terrain. We're covering that element, and Honorable Tsirua would understand. We started with pit places and started with Bray on the basis of terrain we're testing there. But in the next batch that is coming of ambulances, we're still going to add that element. But we have a deliberation in the department that we are looking to what is the best option between purchasing ambulances and having ambulances through a lease. Because the difference is, if you purchase them, they are your own property. Majority of ambulances would do more than 100,000 kilometers in a year. In that period, they are not of the value because of the high level of mileage, as Honorable Wilson and Honorable Chirua were saying. Now we're opting for a lease. The advantage of a lease is that if you are leased 100 ambulances, when one is due for service, the leaser is giving you an ambulance to replace that. When one is in repairs, the leaser is giving you an ambulance to replace that. Currently, if you buy them, whenever you have a breakdown, it's minus one ambulance. Whenever you have a service, minus one ambulance. We want to move for us. The question is by Honorable Chiro. I think that the administrator has said that on suspensions, on staff establishment vacancies, on infrastructure, we will therefore submit a report on that. I think that, I mean, I'm attracted more when Honorable Chiro says, brief the committee so that we're able to understand what are the challenges. We should welcome that call to do that. On motorist administrator's answer, in terms of the mass vaccination, what we have done, we have registered most of our sites on the basis of static and outreach, meaning that from phase two, like the members were saying, phase two and phase three would be more complicated. From phase two, we then decentralize areas where people are vaccinated, but on the basis that the site was already registered for outreach process. The question was, tell me, I'm tested in Taung, which ones are, it's Taung Hospital currently, and Sikking Community Health Center is going to come in for the second phase and the third phase. But Honorable Chiro, when she said that, well, the problem in Taung of infrastructure of facilities, I can agree with that, but the department is working very well and ensuring that we do intervention. She will be interested with the fact that the worst facilities there is Ukwana Clinic and Lower Majiahoro. Both of them, we are in the process of procuring alternative building material for them to have proper structures so that they run formal and functional infrastructure programs there, Chairperson. On the matter of the THPs, no, it's not true. The MEC has run four consultation processes, in one in each district, engaging with them in terms of their role, engaging with them in terms of their registration, because they are covered under this first phase that deals with healthcare workers. Honorable Kwakhube would be happy. I'm in JST where she was. I am here to just observe how are we improving in the process of vaccination in the area. But I'm not only doing that. I'm observing progress in development of Ward 1, which gives us extra 16 beds and 3 ICUs. I'm observing development and progress in emergency service area, which was the reason for overcrowding. I'm also taking the Gateway Clinic. And this means our infrastructure project here it's meant to ensure that we are ready for delivery and introduction of the National Health Insurance Scheme. Where I am, I know that the minister had confirmed to MECs that the next batch that we're going to get is this week, 80,000 from Johnson and Johnson. Johnson and Johnson is delivered in batches of 2 weeks. 80,000 comes. When that 80,000 comes to the country, it's allocation to provinces. The next 2 weeks, 80,000 comes. When that comes, then it's another province. The issue of a follow-up, what has been given to the Ministerial Advisory Committee, which can be dealt with the minister, is that investigations must be done scientifically as to whether you could give people one vaccine that needs a follow-up and then later use another vaccine as a follow-up to that one. Whether that could be done scientifically and procedurally. That's an issue that is left with the interministerial task team that is responsible for vaccinations. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Okay. Yeah, there was a point raised by Honorable Ismail that when Jean, Ms. Hunter was answering, left out because she did not know which clinics are those. I will give her that space now to raise those clinics that she wanted to expand on in relation to that. Honorable Ismail.
Thank you, Chair. The three healthcare centers that I'm inquiring on is the one is in Sekeng, one is Yoburton, and the other one is Masipastad.
Yeah. If they don't get the proper ones, the names of those honorable Ismail.
What I'm speaking.
Yes.
Chair, okay. May I continue? Okay, I just wanted to get a full report on the status of these three healthcare centers, how much has been spent already, and, you know, are residents utilizing these clinics right now? Thank you.
Yeah, we were raising that for clarity so that you can note it, Ms. Hunter. That would be a follow-up question that you can write back to us for Honorable Ismail. I noticed...
Dr. Chair, we've got it now, Chair, thank you.
I noticed, Dr. Tembe Kwayo, you have got a follow-up question.
It's not a follow-up question. It's the working contact number, like I usually request from all the provinces, to say if there are issues, who do we talk to? And as usual, it should be a number, which one, the one that I call, the person must pick up the phone and give response to whatever the needs there are pertaining to the province. And on a serious line, Chairperson, even though I talked while the responses were given, I just want to say to the last person who was responding to say, I think on this platform, we are all members of parliament. And the issues that were addressed today were the questions that were raised by members of parliament. But to be called someone definitely is degrading, very much degrading, because I remember I am the person who posed that question and I repeated it, but I can never ever be addressed as someone while other members of parliament are addressed as honorable members. It's very much unacceptable and I don't take it very lightly. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, honorable Dr. Tembe Kwayo, I would like to say yes. Maybe MC Sambata, you could have put it differently. I'm answering your question to the Tembe Kwayo, it's a question that also is arising from the public in this regard, and addressed it to her. It felt like she's being lumped into people who are just there. Now, I would think maybe you could reiterate, but I've heard you mention your apology, but I'm just expressing that the way you said it might have really gone in a way that may not have sat very well. She always asked for that we get Jeanette a number that is not going to be saying, please call me again tomorrow, a number where we can be able to relate with in the province if, as portfolio committee members, we need to access you or the MEC. Can you give us that number and maybe the MEC can come back again?
Chairperson, I think it's best, since this is a political party, that the number be the number of the Chief of Staff in the MEC's office. And it is Mr. Kumalo Molifi. And his number is 084-578-4121.
Don't be too fast. You are too fast. Again.
Okay, Chief. I'll repeat, Honorable Chair. It is the Chief of Staff in the office of the MEC. It is Mr. Kumalo Molefe. And his number is 084-578-4121.
Okay, all right then. Honorable MEC?
I had not meant to be disrespectful to the honorable member and Dr. Tembekwa. And Dr. MC was asking the question. I apologize, Chair, with no condition. But what I would request to honorable members is that because they're honorable members, they can also use my number for WhatsApp purposes. When a member has an issue, just send me a WhatsApp. I will also link up with the people in the administration who must give proper answer. My number can be used either for call or the best way for WhatsApp. Then you have a recorded way of how we deal with issues. My number is 072-198-5433, and my name is Madoda Sambata. Honorable members can use that whenever they have an inquiry provincially, so that I can properly handle that with administration for proper response. In fact, provincially, we have a WhatsApp group with the portfolio committee. That includes MMCs of health in all municipalities. And that's meant exactly for that, to enhance communication amongst us, so that whenever a member has a quick issue to ask, he or she knows where to ask that. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, can we then release the Department of Health Northwest? Thank you for those numbers. We'll make use of them. We will have no way to miss getting in touch with you. Thanks for the briefing. Continue with the work there. There's still a lot of work that is to be done there. We are released now. Thank you. Members, can you stay behind for our own internal work?
Alert Jenny De Beer has left the meeting.
Yes, sir.
Zoom meeting window, meeting tools, muted, currently unmuted, Alt plus A, button.
Okay. Honorable members, I now would like to take the item, the last item on the agenda, that is the minutes. I think there are two or three sets of minutes that we have been sent and finished with, and I would like Ms. Machalamba now to take us through some of those that were outstanding, the two sets, and maybe the minutes of the very same day where we were having it. Then can, if we can flight those, Honorable Ms. Machalamba, for the members to look at one by one, maybe start by indicating how many you have and then start with the first one. Is Ms. Machalamba not on the platform? Mbali, Ms.
Machalamba. I have, it's four sets, Chair.
Alisa Agati. Kuba Ms. Machalamba.
Okay, Chair. The first set is the one of the 5th of February, which was deferred to this meeting last week, Friday. Please go down, Lindo.
Is this the one where you needed to check the minister's input?
Yes, Chair, I want to be sure. Yes, Chair. Wait. Yes, Chair, that's the one. So I've checked the recording. And yes, the minister included safety and efficacy and availability. I've also included those two and the issue of the pricing and the convenience. So I've added those in the minutes. Thank you, Chair.
Where is that one? Show it. I think it's bullet number one or something like that.
Lindo, go down. It's bullet number... on the basis of which suppliers, that's how the sentence starts.
Yes.
Yes, that's the one, Chair.
On the basis of which suppliers. Informed the minister, informed the committee that it is based on the safety, efficacy and availability and beyond that points in the issue. Okay, this is where we needed that to be checked. If
yes.
Honorable members can know that the records have been checked and it says it includes that of the availability was accompanied by safety and efficacy. Right. Any other point that was left out in this minute?
No,
Chair. Can we check the attendance register, the first page there?
Move up.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Any mover for this minute?
Chair, it's Honorable Anakela. I move Honorable for the adoption of the minutes.
Honorable Kela moves for the adoption. Any seconder?
Honorable Sokacha seconds.
Honorable Sokacha seconds. Second set of minutes. Ms. Machalamba, thank you.
A second set were the minutes of the 10th of... 10th of February, Chair.
Also related to the briefing by the minister, and they were tied up to these minutes that we have just endorsed. I can't remember what was the point here that made them to go back.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Some of the issues there that were raised.
You had to add them. Yeah.
Yes, the issue of research availability.
Okay. I think there were points here that were raised by Honorable Chirwa, and
it was about us, a department giving an impression that if the research that was available was only for AstraZeneca, something like that, Chair.
The committee wanted to know what was the neutralization.
Mm. And the other one was about the two vaccines from China.
Yeah. The one that is above there. The committee wanted to know. Don't go past. The committee wanted to know.
The yes, and the other one was about the Sinopharm. Why the findings were not, why was it not made public, the findings or the offer by the state?
That point, Honorable Member. Hello.
She wasn't they also on the Sinopharm one, wasn't they also fairly on the Sputnik vaccine? I remember
we
asked
this
question, yes?
The Sputnik also, we asked about the Sputnik and Sinopharm.
It was not on this meeting, Chair. I listened to the recording, and on the recording, it's this Sinopharm. Maybe the other vaccine issue came in other meetings, the meeting of the third. But I listened to the recording specifically for this, and it was Sinopharm. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, that means some one of our other meetings hasn't been clarified properly, Chair. Another issue that I'm not sure which minister basically belongs to now, because we're looking at this when it's so late from when we had these meetings, was the issue of, procuring a way private medical aids like Discovery can procure vaccines themselves. I'm not sure exactly which minister it belongs to, but I remember sending it to Buyo. I'm going to tell you, I don't know which minister it belongs to. But that means that our minister is actually not correct if it's not in this one.
Can I raise something, Chair?
Yes, Ms.
I'm not sure also which minister you are referring to, but what I will also indicate is that I also summarize questions. I don't write all the 17 or the 15 questions. Some of the questions I summarize, hence I've also indicated that there's a recording with the specific questions that the member asked, because sometimes you'll find one member will ask a question and another member will ask the same question but in a different way. So in those cases, we try and cluster the question as one question. Not to say we don't cover some of the questions, and if one question is not covered in the minutes because it's a summary of proceedings, then it's covered in the recording where all the details are. Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Yeah,
sorry, Chairperson. Can I say something?
Who's that one? Dr. Tembekwayo. Yes.
I believe we must have trust in our secretary, especially when she says she listened to the audio, the record, and she also made note, which means whatever is reflected in this meeting is exactly what was discussed according to the record and according to the minutes that she took that day. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Tembekwayo. And therefore, that also, again, honorable members, just to support what Dr. Tembekwayo and Mr. You can't be saying the secretary will record each and every word. We stay here for maybe 3 hours. The meeting might be too long. She is able to link my point, and but the Sputnik Sinopharm, I also asked, and Ms. Ismail also asked. So we do see that here. It's an overlap. But again, maybe things will be corrected as we go forward, because we'll have to try our best now to make sure every minute we sit, we endorse the minutes of the previous committee. That's why we're trying to rush there. Sorry for that. Honorable members, with those additions and corrections that have been done, can I ask for members on the meetings of the 10th, minutes of the 10th of February to be approved? Honorable Gela.
Honorable Gela moves for adoption of the minutes with the corrections.
Honorable Gela moves with the corrections that the minutes be adopted.
Alert portfolio.
Mashengwa. Screen share. Second the minutes with the adoption.
Mama Shengwa calls for seconding with the amendments put. Thank you very much. Ms. Machalamba, the third set.
The third set is the 17th of February.
Yes, what was the briefing by Mpumalanga?
By Mpumalanga, check.
Yes, a briefing by Mpumalanga. Let's go. Members, just check and see if your number, only Sukers was not there. All of you, your names are appearing there. Thank you very much. And now, Honorable Chirwa, you have put her number, initials properly, NN. Let's move towards the end of the page and see what, after noting, what did we say? Members have read these minutes, summary of the responses. Okay, resolution, the committee. The committee agreed that it should invite MRC. Great. And then I hope we will actually the aim of discussing budgets. That point is coming up again. Honorable members, looking into these resolutions based on our interaction in Mpumalanga, can we agree and accept these minutes as a reflection of our discussion? Having read them, they were posted to us, I think, a day before yesterday.
Chair, I move for the acceptance of the minutes.
The minutes of the 17th of February, Honorable Sokacha moves for the adoption. May I call for a seconder, please?
Honorable Kela, second, Chair.
Honorable Kela calls for seconding these minutes. Thank you very much. Honorable members, may I take the last set of minutes?
The last set, Chair, is the 19th of February, which was last week Friday when we adopted the minutes. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, that on this day we set to actually listen to these minutes, and we are all here except for Honorable Van Staten and Sukers. Your names are all listed there. We had about 26 minutes, 26 sets of minutes. Yes, Honorable Van Staten, you were not there.
Which meeting was this, Chair? Just come again over there.
On the 19th of February.
Oh,
when
yeah,
we were 15 yeah. minutes, last week Friday.
That's right, yes.
Yeah, that's the day I found you in the party. Okay.
Correct.
Joking. So this was the day, Honorable Members, we actually adopted these minutes, and we are now bringing that to today's meeting. That two sets of minutes, the 5th and the 10th, were outstanding. They have been to be brought here today. And the ones that are approved now, the ones of the 17th again, and we are then endorsing all that. The committee resolved to meet with SAPRA on a regular basis. Can we put, didn't you say in brackets, regular, maybe once a month? Let me receive regular updates from the minister on a regular basis. That one fortnightly, if members can come and indicate the regular basis may mean anything else to any other people. But we thought we would want to meet with SAPRA for now, monthly. I don't know whether it's in my mind.
If I may, Chair.
Yes, Honorable.
If I may, Chair. Yes, we said initially we discussed them coming every 2 weeks. But certainly a minimum of once a month. So that was the final decision by the committee.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah, that is true. We said in brackets once a month for SAPRA, and for the minister, we said fortnightly. At least during this time, honorable members, can we adopt that as a true reflection of our discussion?
Yes, Chair. Honorable Anakela
calls
for the approval of the minutes.
Yes. Any more seconder?
Chair Mashengwa second the adoption of the minutes.
Calls. Thanks. Yes. Honorable members, thank you very much for that. May I make another request to you? I was going to try and request that maybe the meetings with the minister that we are requesting fortnightly, if maybe they may not come in the schedule of Wednesdays, but even if they do come on a Wednesday, but maybe they don't block other work that we need to do because they are going to be that frequent. So it means in a month we'll have two other issues to deal with rather than to have four issues and have the minister's briefings, which may be an update, to take place any other time of a Wednesday. I was going to check that because we would need to do other things other than just meeting with the minister twice a month. I know it's important, but we can still meet with him twice a month, but processing, like I'm saying, if we have another hour in the afternoon, not necessarily of a Wednesday. I'm just going to check that with you first before I can make a firm proposal to this fortnightly to the minister. If members can maybe comment on that.
Just Chair,
in principle.
I agree, Chair, as long as it's not, affecting our plenary settings, I think it's a good idea. We wouldn't want to squeeze everything into one meeting so we don't have enough time for everything. So I agree with you.
Thank Chair, you very much. Yes, Ms. Keller.
Yes,
Honorable Ismail.
I also want to support you and also agree, Chair, with your proposal. But also, Chair, I just want to check with my colleagues, especially the DA and the EFF, why they don't also approve the minutes, because they are also part of the minutes, the meetings. They are so quiet, but in terms of raising issues and matters arising, they are raising, but at the end, they don't approve. What is their problem? I just want to check, Chair, on the later note, Chair.
On a lighter note. Okay. And then members on a lighter note may respond.
Zoom meeting window.
If I'm matching.
Currently unmuted.
Yes, Honorable Wilson.
It's often transpired here that we're still going through the details and through what has been submitted there. We take our role very seriously. We read those documents in detail, and very often we're still going through them when ANC approves in seconds. So it's not a case of us, if we disapproved and if we did not agree, believe me, very, very clearly, we would instantly say we do not approve of these minutes and will not say them more.
Okay, no, thank you very much. No, we won't take that too long. Thanks very much, honorable member.
Can I respond?
Chairperson?
There are two other hands. One is honorable Dr. Tembekwayo, followed by honorable Ismail. Yes, Dr. Tembekwayo?
No, I just want to say it's upon our right either to say something or not in this meeting, whether it's pertaining to asking questions or to approving or disapproving any other matter, inclusive of the minutes as it arises from this committee. Thank you.
Honorable Ismail.
Thank you, Chair, if you will indulge me. I just wanted to confirm or request from you with regard to correspondence. I've emailed you correspondence for requesting for a meeting with the ICSC and HBCSA. Can you please give me some feedback on when our portfolio committee can be meeting with these entities so that we can, you know, get some clarity issues with them, and we can address them and they can give us a presentation so that we can, scrutinize and do some oversight on these as well, please.
Don't abbreviate too much, Ms. Ismail. Which organizations are those?
Chair, it was for the internship, ICSP, the Internship and Community Service Program, and the Healthcare Professionals one, the one I emailed you for the forensics and so forth.
Perhaps I will have to check with Ms. Machalamba. Maybe she won't be able to respond here, because when I do write, she then forwards those things for me. She sends those correspondence for me, and then I do check. She checks when the responses have come back. I don't know. I haven't checked with her now, but maybe we'll come back to you on that one. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. If you want, I'll take a screenshot and put it on the group for you to make it a bit easier.
Appreciate it, ma'am. Thank you. Honorable members, any other member, any other issue that you'd like to raise? Yeah. Yesterday in the House, I tried to make a follow-up with the House Chair with regards to the meeting requested. I will make another follow-up today when I see him in the House, because I said, okay, I don't have my diary here with me. I'll come back to you. So I will come back to you once he has come back to me. Hopefully before the end of today, you will have to actually advise me when we can meet with him. Okay. Thank you very much, honorable members. If there's no other question, any other clarity seeking or comment from members, we'll then bring this meeting to a close. Thank you and have a good afternoon.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.